Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave, your host. We've got a great show lined up, so let's get started. Okay, this is episode number 92, and it is the week of March 12th, 2010. And I'm in taper mode for the Shamrock Marathon at this point. All I have is an 8 miler left and then a couple novelty runs before the race and then the marathon on March 21st. I'm really looking forward to it. What I did last weekend, I never got around to doing my 12 miler on the weekend. Things came up and I had some where I had to work over the weekend. So I did it Monday when I got home from work, and that was the longest run I've ever done after work. I did 12 miles in the afternoon, in the evening. And after doing that, I just been so tender in my legs, I decided to take the rest of the week off from running and let everything heal up. It was kind of an intense 12 miles. I ran it right around at 2 hours, which is a pretty fast pace for me to maintain. For 2 hours to run 10-minute miles is not something that I do. I usually run slower than that. Not too much slower, but a little bit. So I think I was, and matter of fact, it was actually that kind of my right quad was kind of hurting the following morning. And what I did was I ran the Patrick Henry Half Marathon course in reverse, and pretty much door to door, it was 12 miles. And I probably could have cut off, I'm trying to think, I can probably start getting a 10-mile run out of that route if I want, by cutting off just a little bit. I jogged around, ran around a little bit just to add a little bit, and by the time I got back to my house, was right at the 12-mile mark. So if nothing else, I've got a nice 10-miler. It was just a real nice afternoon, and I just kind of stayed keyed up all day, knowing that when I got home from work, I was going to have to run 12 miles. And it's tough to do. It's not something that I would recommend. But that puts me into taper mode for Shamrock. And that's when you have all this extra time on your hands to sit around I usually train in the afternoon, so I have time in the evening. We're getting some real spring-like temperatures today. It's almost 70 degrees. And I've just love the fact that I don't have to, you know, go out for a run. I can just sit on the porch and just kind of watch things go by. And the only problem is I'll get behind on listening to some of the podcasts that I listen to. But anyway, it's nice to have a lot of extra time. This past weekend, I wasn't able to get my run in, but I was able to meet with Michael George, who certifies race courses, and he started work on certifying our new route for the Ashland Railroad Run. And I got a real quick crash course in how that works. He didn't really tell me a whole lot about it other than our finish line is not going to be where we initially wanted it to. It's not going to be where we wanted it to be. It's going to be a little bit farther up the road. And initially I was kind of disappointed, but as I started thinking about it, I think it's going to be better because it keeps, there's no 90 degree turn at the finish. It's a long straightaway, almost a half mile of straightaway. And I don't think anybody's really gonna notice that much that after they cross the finish line, they just have to turn and walk back about a half block back to the festivities. And I guess I need to send that updated course over to the police department. Anyway, it was nice to meet Michael George. He is he's on the board with the Richmond Roadrunners Club. And he's just one of two people, I think, in Richmond that knows how to certify race courses. And I was kind of intrigued by his method. He goes over it with his bike several times, and I actually hijacked some information from the internet on how you measure a race course. And if it takes him several hours and over the course of a couple days, because he rides the course a couple times, I think maybe up to four times possibly, I can only imagine how difficult it would be to certify an actual marathon course. If it takes that long just to do a 10K. So here, these are some of the skills that a person who measures and certifies a race course needs to have. And of course, these are all hijacked. I plagiarized all this off of the internet. Fearless, anal retentive, detail-oriented person to ensure running course accuracy, skilled in problem solving, math calculation, line drawing, detail elaboration, bike handling skills and lack of fear a must, track, cross-country, or road running experience highly recommended, must own a bicycle, a CPSC certified helmet, I'm not sure what that is, and a RRTC approved measuring device, no GPS users, must memorize simple mathematical calculations, exact metric and English course distances, no capabilities and limitations of GPS alternative measuring systems, able to communicate USA track and field definition of accurate course to general public, skin thickness, selective hearing, and love of travel, able to adapt courses at whim of race directors and police. Compensation varies by difficulty of job, prior experience of... Okay, this is actually just a, it was like a help wanted for someone to measure a course. And I got some other... I was really just interested in how somebody is interested in certifying race courses. And there's a lot to it. And it has nothing that... One thing that does not really help is going out and using your GPS and then getting on the USA Track and Field website and trying to map out a run, because it's not going to be that accurate. The GPS was not as accurate as this calibrated device that he put on the front hub of his bike. And I was just really, we were trying to move the, I know I'm not making too much sense, but we were trying to move the starting line back farther in a parking lot so I could get the finish line closer down to the Arts and Activity Center. But the problem with that was that there's a drop-off curb as people turned a corner coming out of the parking lot onto the right, to the railroad avenue there, this what we call Center Street, and Michael said that would not be that good. So we're gonna go with the course as designed, and I will take full responsibility if people hate it. But the reason the course is as it is because we were limited on where we could put the course. It had to be in one small area of town. And I'll be honest with you, I think it's actually pretty remarkable that I was able to get 6.2 miles out of this one section of town, because we can't cross another main road that goes over the railroad tracks. We can only cross one. And you don't want the race to be away from the railroad tracks, because it's called the railroad run. So hopefully everybody will like it. We're just going to need, and it's going to be fine. I mean, I'm just kind of thinking out loud. I was a little bit disappointed on where the finishing line would be. But as everything kind of sunk in and I started envisioning what things were going to look like on race day, I think it's going to work out really good. And I think previous runners of this race are going to like the fact that there's no turn at the end where you have to slow down before you make that last 30-yard dash to the finishing chute. So I think it's going to be just fine. So I got to hang out with Michael a little bit, Michael did express a little bit of concern with the double loop course, but he understood our limitations, and the way we're going to handle that on race day is we're going to train our marshals. We're going to have a marshals meeting, and we're going to make sure they fully understand how to direct runners based on where they are on the course. And we just need some heads-up marshals, that's all. I think it's going to be fine. And of course, I've got a lot riding on it, but we can always blame the police department and the town for making us change the race course from years past. And the cool thing about meeting Michael is that he had actually certified the course over the years. He said he's done maybe 3 railroad run courses since he's been involved in certifying race courses, because it's changed here and there over the years. And he pretty much certifies the races around Richmond if you want a certified race course. So it was really cool to meet him. Now, there's why do you want to have your race course measured? Well, the reason is because you want people to know that it is the distance that you're advertising. I mean, there are some people, I'm not in this type of subculture, but in some running subcultures, people have to submit times for qualification reasons, and if a course is certified, then I presume they could come out and run it and submit that time, because it's on a certified course, and the results would be published. So it's, and if your course is not certified, you risk people running. You could actually have 10 to 15 people who will go and find a 10K that's certified, and that's at $20-$30 a pop, that's a couple hundred dollars of revenue that you're not going to get just because you didn't certify the course. Now, it comes with a fee certifying the course, and the fee for certifying the Iceland Railroad Run is $225, and that is was a little bit of a surprise, but we were able to get that covered by a sponsor, so we were able to get the cost of the race of the recertifying fee covered, and we don't have to eat that as a nonprofit group. So you want your race to be certified if you can, unless it's just a fun event. In September, we've started the at the elementary school here in town. The PTA has started a run, a fundraiser run called the Tiger Trot, and it's just a fun race. It's a 5K. It's the Tiger Trot because tigers are the little mascot for the elementary school. And I do not believe that is a certified course, because I think last year we just rented the clock and the finishing equipment and timing equipment from Richmond Roadrunners Club, and it's just a fun run. It's mostly kids and adults, and it's not a real serious event. So that's not certified, because there's just really no need to certify it, because the course might end up changing over time based on different people being involved with the race. So to get your course measured properly, you have to have a certified course measurer to do that. The first tool that person needs is a bike with a counter that's mounted on the front wheel hub, and that has to be calibrated. And I remember Michael, he ran through the course the first time, and then I think he was going to do it a second time, and then he said he was going to go and calibrate or check the calibration of the counter and then come back and do it again just to make sure. And to me, that's really cool that he would keep coming back and do it just to make sure the course is the correct distance. I guess the amount of times that he's going to do it, he probably comes up with some variations just because of conditions, or, you know, he can't ride his bike on the exact same line every time. So there's probably going to be some small variations. And I can only imagine with the distance of a marathon, how varied that can be on measuring the course different times, because it's impossible to take the exact same line through curves or the exact same line down a straightaway as you do each time. And over the course of 26.2 miles, there is going to get some variation in there. So once the count is determined, the wheel revolutions and per mile is determined, what the measurer will do will add a 1/1000th factor to the count to help prevent the course from being shorter than the actual distance. So in other words, a 10-kilometer run is actually going to be closer to 6.21992571 miles in distance. And but once when the person's on the course on their bike, certifying it and measuring it, they act like a runner. So that person will ride the shortest distance possible from start to finish, trying to ride tangents on the curved sections of the course. If the runners are going to be restricted from part of the road, then that's noted. Distance splits are made at the multiples of each count per mile, and they're noted relative to fixed points, because other things can change. When Michael was out there, he was using street lamps as reference points, because he knew they would be there on race day. He knew they would be there when he came back to measure the course again. And he used little paint marks on the street so he'd know where he was the next time he came out. All right, there's several other additional steps that the measurer has to take. But at some point, they drop a map of the course that shows the detailed location of the start, the turn points, the finish. And I'm anxiously awaiting the drawing from Michael George to see what he comes up with. I said he's going to email it out here hopefully soon. But each of the distance splits are noted, as well as any places where the runners are going to be restricted by cones or some kind of barrier. And then the map and the calibration form, a measurement form, and then an application for the course certification is sent to the USATF state course certifier along with a check. And then the certifier will review that paperwork. They'll certify that the measurement met the USATF protocols. Sometimes they might ask for more information. And then a certificate is prepared. And then that certificate has a number. And then the number and the map of the course is placed in the USATF course database, where it can be found by the general public. And this is what you see on their website. And I'll put a link on that in the show notes at ashlanddave.podbean.com. If for some reason you've never seen that website, it is pretty cool. You can look up just runs all over the country. So After that's done, the race director is then asked to place that certificate number on all documents that are related to the event, both before and after. And the distances are valid for 10 years from the date of certification. So that's kind of interesting to know. I did not know that before I started looking into this. And then after that, the course has to be measured again and then submitted to be certified. So the racing on an accurate certified course really does benefit individual athletes, because that person can truly compare their performance to other days or with other people, because they know they're running the exact same distance and it's not any variation. Courses benefit the race director because it's another proof to market, like I said earlier, to potential customers of the event's quality, because they know the distance is certified, because the certification standards are the same for all races. So you might want to think twice before you take that GPS opinion of someone else telling you that that's a 10K or 6.2 miles and taking that as the gospel. Looking up on the USATF website first, because if it isn't there, then it's not totally accurate. And you definitely, if you're going to have a big event, you want to bill it as a certified course, because that's the top course you can have. It's either certified or it's not, and it's worth taking the time to do it. The only problem being is that sometimes you might get a little short on time, especially if your measurer, the person that you're using, has other obligations or is doing other courses or actually spends Saturdays, volunteering at races. You got to get in well ahead of time. It's definitely not something you want to procrastinate with, and that's what we found out, because we were getting down to crunch time for the Ashland Railroad Run, but everything is going to work out really good. So if you happen to be listening to this podcast and you're thinking about running the Railroad Run, you kind of heard a little bit of behind the scenes on how we've had to change the course and get it certified, but I think the quality of the race is going to be the same or higher as in years past. And we're going to have a great, there's going to be lots of vendors out there. And I think last year we had well over 400 people, which is pretty good for a small town race. We get a lot of people that come up from Richmond. So I'm really excited about it. That's April 10th, which is a Saturday, 2010. And I will be talking more about that in the next show. Excuse me. As time marches on. Plus, I have that cool commercial at the end of the podcast for you to check out. So that's just some information on course certifying. Now, it's kind of an interesting thing. Definitely, if you have any interest in it at all, I would recommend you do a Google search or whatever in your favorite search engine for running course certification, because there's tons of information out there about it. Now, that really just touched the iceberg, but it was kind of neat to actually ask questions of someone who does that, Michael George. And just get his opinion on the course that we had laid out and potential problems that he saw, so we can address those with our course marshals. And he said he liked the course, so that's a good thing, because he's got a lot of experience with making race courses. He's also the race director for the Patrick Henry Half Marathon, which is a great half marathon that takes place the week before Labor Day up here in Hanover County. All right, so that's that for course certification, and let's go ahead and get into the email bag section of the show. We've got some real good listener emails. All right, we've got some emails, and first one's from Albert, and I forgot where he's from, but he is he's trying to knock down his 5K time, and actually he did. He ran a incredible 28:46 overall pace of 9:13, and he did it by running hard, taking a walk break, and then just tearing up the last part of the race. And nobody says you got to run the whole way in a 5K either. If you just need a little bit of a break, of course, if you do some speed work, you might be able to actually maintain a higher pace all along. But it's just a different method. He and I had exchanged some emails about how to knock down the 5K time a little bit using a walk run, and I gave him just something I thought that might work, and he tried it, and it looks like it worked. So, Albert, well done, and hopefully you can continue to take some time off of that 5K. 5Ks are hard, because you got to maintain such a fast pace for such a short period of time, and it can really drain you out at the end. We have a cul-de-sac series in the Richmond area called the Cul-de-sac Series that are consecutive three Monday nights in a row, and they're in the middle of the summer. And running three miles in the blistering heat is brutal. I don't think I've ever gotten a time as such as yours. So well done, and thanks for sending in the email. and hope your training continues to improve. It's nice to hear from you. Also heard from Joseph. Joseph is Cleveland, is that where from? They run in the cold. And he's got a blog that he started that I'm going to link in the show notes. It's arunnerd.blogspot.com. That's arunnerd.blogspot.com. And I'll link to that at ashlanddave.podbean.com if you want to check that out. He just kind of got back into things, participated in his first event, and put a race report up on the blog. And he's also going to plan to do some equipment reviews, new routes and trails, and he's going to review some podcasts and different running websites that keeps him motivated. So you might want to check that out. And Joseph had also asked for some suggestions on trying to get a group together for doing the long runs on the weekends. And Joseph, hopefully there's some kind of running club in your area. Maybe you can put a little blurb in the monthly newsletter or something. That you're looking to join a group or get a group started. The hardest part about being part of a group is the pacing. You know, if you join a group, you show up a few times, and if you're really, really fortunate, sometimes you actually end up with a great pace group, people that run the same pace as you, where you're not running faster than you want to run, and nobody else is. And it's just, sometimes it's really interesting who you gravitate toward just because of pace and the people that you meet. The worst thing, in my opinion, that you want to do is run with a group that's running faster than you want to, and then you look to the running as a chore and you can't even keep a conversation. So hopefully you can find some folks and get that group started on the weekends, and I'll make sure I check out your blog and shoot some comments over that. So thanks for checking in with the email. Appreciate hearing from you. I also heard from Chris at San Diego, is where he hails from. That's California for international listeners. And we had kind of initiated an email discussion regarding treadmills. And what he does is he goes by the time, not distance. And what we had been talking about was the accuracy of treadmills. And what Chris does is he goes by the time, not the distance. For example, a 12-mile training run will normally take him an hour and 48 minutes running at a 9-minute pace, which is what he's got his body trained for. So if he has to run 12 miles, he runs for an hour and 48 minutes on the treadmill that feels like a 9-minute mile. He doesn't even pay attention to the pace and distance that's displayed on the control panel. And he had supposed that you might call this cheating. Well, you know, I don't really think it does. I've run for time before, and sometimes if I run for 50 minutes and I run at a pretty decent clip, I know that I'm running at least 5 miles, and I'm just kind of in tune with my body. So I agree with you, Chris. If you're kind of in tune with yourself, and you can, you know the distance you're doing, and you know, so you're off of a quarter mile, you're off a half a mile. If you're doing 20 to 30 miles a week, being off a half a mile or a quarter mile is not really gonna impact your training really that much, unless you're a real stickler for getting in those mileage goals. But a half mile here or a quarter mile there doesn't really matter a whole lot in training. The only time that distance really matters is when you're a half mile from the finish line. I mean, that's, or a quarter mile from the finish line. That, to me, that's really the only time a quarter mile or half mile makes a difference. So anyway, I agree with you on that. And thanks for checking in on that. And I'm glad that you're listening to the podcast. He said he's been listening for a few months and likes it. So I appreciate you checking in. It's always nice to hear from new listeners. And, of course, I heard from Rich out of the Woodlands, Texas. And, Rich, I owe you a pile. Oh, hold on. Let me get the Hawaii Five-O music going. All right. Now that we got that going, I can get into Rich's comment. He posted on the website, ashlanddave.podbean.com. And, actually, I'd gotten a post and an email from him because his post actually got deleted. And, Rich, what happened was I got spammed, and I was deleting the spam postings. And yours got deleted with those, and once they're deleted, I couldn't figure out how to get it back. So sorry about that. That's why you did not see your post. Rich ran the Texas Independence Relay. He has forwarded me a race report, which I'm going to put on the website. See, if you've ever wondered what the Texas Independence Relay was, you got to check out that race report. It's going to be at ashlanddave.podbean.com. And Rich, I heard this, I was listening to another show, and I heard it referred to as a Texas Independence Race, and I'm pretty sure it's the relay. So I haven't checked their site to verify that, but I'm pretty sure it's called the Texas Independence Relay because it's a relay all the way across Texas. So you got to read Rich's report. It's incredible. It's just too detailed to summarize real quickly and do it any justice. So I'm going to direct you over to ashlanddave.podbean.com and read his race report because it's really good. It's 203 miles from Gonzales, Texas to the San Jacinto Monument. And as of the time I'm producing this podcast, the race has already happened. But he, in the email that he wrote me was before the race, and he was hoping to have a lot of fun. And Rich, appreciate the update. The report was excellent. Thank you so much for forwarding that. And like I said, I've posted that on the site. Hopefully you didn't mind doing that. And just as a little disclaimer, I have to say that if you do send me an email in reference to anything on the show, please know that it's subject to being shared with the all the listeners that I have, which is probably maybe 300 to 400 people. So, or at least that's how many downloads I get about each week. So anyway, thanks for the race report, Rich. It's always good to hear from you, and hopefully you enjoyed the Hawaii 5-0 music there. Heard from Richard out of Northern Virginia, and what Richard's going to hook me up with is I'm actually going to meet up with him when I go to Northern Virginia to do a practice run for the North Face Endurance 50-miler ultra marathon, which is on June 5th. And Richard, I really do appreciate that a lot. I'm going to keep your number, and I'm actually going to probably bring Tom with me because he hasn't signed up yet. He needs to sign up, and that way we can kind of get an idea of what that one section of the trail is like. And I would think that by the time we come up there, I don't know how long our training run would be, but the main thing is really just to see part of that park and just kind of see our way around. So when we come up, because I'll be coming up the evening before where it's probably going to be dark, and then, of course, it'll be dark the morning when the race starts at 5 a.m. So I'd kind of like to get an idea of where I'm going to be during the daylight hours. So I appreciate that offer, and I'm definitely going to be taking you up on that unless it's snowing or pouring down rain, you know, the whole month of May. So I really appreciate that offer. It'd be nice to meet you. I also heard from Alan. He's an American listener, but he travels a lot, and he's in Europe. He's in Holland. He runs everywhere. What I've been discussing with him is how he packs his running gear and gets to all these places and is able to keep his stuff from being too lousy. And I think he's the one. No, there was another guy that used the hair dryer and stuff from the hotel rooms. But what Alan does is that he packs his stuff separately and packs two sets of running gear and actually keeps the wet stuff in a separate suitcase. Which is a great idea, and he closed his email by saying "Spreechen sin mighty and hen spader," which I think means "talk to you later." Is that did I pronounce that all those words right, Alan? Anyway, appreciate the email. Good to hear from you, and hopefully you have a safe trip back. It looks like he's in Holland now, which he said has loads and loads of paved bike paths out in the country, and everything's very flat and at sea level. You know, I didn't know that Holland was at sea level. You know, when I think of Holland, I just think of these big windmills sitting on. Like windmills of these Dutch-looking homes, stone homes on hills. I didn't realize that it's at sea level. I'm terrible with geography. I really am. I probably ought to pull out a map and take that out and check that out. I heard from Heather from Chesapeake. I haven't heard from her in a while, so it was really good to hear from her. She's also going to be running the Shamrock Marathon, which is March 21st. And hopefully I'll be seeing her down there, maybe at the Expo. Heather, we're going to be getting down there at the Expo actually on Saturday now. My wife's not going to run the 8K due to injury, so we're actually going to we're actually not going to venture out for the marathon until the 20th. And anyway, we might be running the same finishing time as you, so maybe we will see you. I'll be with a group of three other people. We'll be running in a group. I don't even know what color stuff we'll be wearing, but I have met you before, so I'll be looking for you. And I haven't met you before. I think it was a different Heather I met down at the Outer Banks. Or was it you? I can't remember. It's been a couple of years now. Anyway, Heather said that she ran an 18-miler on the treadmill at the gym, which she thought was really hard because we've had a lot of bad weather in this area. But she thought everything was really okay until she started getting to the point where she's taking gels on a treadmill, which she just thought was kind of a weird thing to do. And I don't blame you. That is kind of a weird concept to take gels while you're running on a treadmill when you have, I guess, everything you would need right around you. But well done. That's an awful long time to be running on the treadmill. She said it maxed out at 99 minutes. So So at the halfway point, she hopped off, took a quick break, and then got started again, and she had everything she needed right there. So anyway, that's hardcore running. When you're doing your long run on a treadmill, 18 miles on a treadmill is way too much for me, but I can understand how you need to get it in there. So thanks for the email. Always nice to hear from listeners. I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. I heard from Mike. Mike runs with the Vibram Five Fingers and sent me a whole lot of information on that. One is a user guide. And one thing from his email that I wanted to share was that he had been using the Five Fingers for a couple of months, and he went to play softball with some friends, and he'd gotten a ride to the game, and he's planning on running home afterwards in his Adidas. But he said it was awful. He said all the responsiveness that he had been used to in the Five Fingers was gone. He felt like he was slower, it was a lot more work, and he felt tired instead of invigorated when he was done. So he's really gotten used to those Five Fingers, and he has recommended a couple different models, I guess, and he sent me a PDF file that explains the pros and cons of each one. And I really do appreciate that, Mike. I don't think I'm quite ready to take the plunge yet. I've got some big races to get through this spring and in the early summer, and then maybe... And actually, I haven't really been having too many problems. My right knee just gets a little bit of an overuse. I do a lot of icing on it. But, you know, it might be something that's worth trying at some point in time. And I'm definitely armed with a lot of information now, and I appreciate you sending that on. I guess I'm just too afraid to do it. I guess that's really the bottom line. So, anyway, Mike shared that he's coming up to 350 miles in the Vibram Five Fingers, and he thinks they're going to go probably that far again because there's no cushioning to wear out. And he thinks that he might be able to wear them right until the sole is worn through. So anyway, Mike, thanks for the information. I really do appreciate the emails, and thanks for sharing some of that information about the homebrew, and I'll continue that conversation with you. All right, well, that is the podcast for this week. The next show is, what I'm going to do, I'm going to attach a bonus show this week. I'm going to put an old episode up called Mental Toughness, and If my good friend Meriwether, who I've been training for the marathon with, if she's listening to this podcast, hopefully, Meriwether, you'll download the old episode, Mental Toughness, and maybe get some food for thought for the marathon. We had a real cool pasta dinner last weekend. Had everybody over except for Brian. I know it was kind of early for the pasta dinner, but we just kind of did it in, you know, marathon tradition. And everybody got to share their anxiety about running. We got two people running the first marathon. It's Ashlyn Bob and Meriwether, and it's just a wonderful thing. I can't wait to be there and see them, you know, cross the finish line. And it kind of looks like we're all going to probably run together for the most part, with the exception of Rodney, because he's got a little more talent when it comes to speed. And nobody's really made any you know, deals, but I do think we're probably going to run probably most of the race all together. Towards the end, there might be some splitting up here and there, just because that gets to be that weird place where, you know, you pass the 20 mile mark and you're not really sure where you're at times. But anyway, if you and Bob, if you listen to the show, I'm not sure if you do, go ahead and download. It's episode 10, but I'm gonna go ahead and put it up with the most recent episode, which this is episode 92. So make sure you check that out and download that. And for all you listeners out there that subscribe, it'll probably be sent to you automatically, and you can just delete it because some of it's got old material, but the mental toughness part is kind of, I guess it still stands. So that's the next race. The next podcast will obviously be a show about the Shamrock Marathon 2010 and hopefully all our adventures that happened down there. And anyway, this is Ashlyn Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. Y'all have a good week.
The 2010 Ashlyn Railroad Run.
Join us on Saturday, April 10th, for the 32nd running of one of Virginia's oldest road races along the tracks and through the historic town of Ashlyn, Virginia, the center of the universe.
This race is one of Virginia's first eco-friendly races and the area's longest running 10K race. This year's race features a new flat and faster course, which is great for setting a PR.
This event also features some of the best and most unique door prizes of any race around the Richmond, Virginia area.
Be sure to come to the center of the universe on April 10th to race!
For more information, go to www.hanoverarts.org and click under News and Happening.
I ran the kids' race last year, and it was fun.
Run Ashland first. See you there.
I like that.
That's awesome.